coming up on this episode of the Leadership Lounge.
He looked as healthy as you can be.
Yeah.
He was super organized with everything in life, but he wasn't organized taking care of his health. I guess he didn't go to the doctor and just suddenly had a heart attack boarding a plane to a conference that we were all going to.
Welcome to Leadership Lounge. My name is Mitch Slater, Executive Director, UBS New York City, and I'm joined by my colleague, Saman Sami, First Vice President, Wealth Management from Dallas, Texas. And the best way to contact us is by emailing mitchslater@ubs.com or samansami@ubs.com. Our guest is not affiliated with UBS.
On this episode of Leadership Lounge, powered by UBS, we're joined in the studio by Dylan Gambardella, founder and CEO of Different Health. Now, Dylan shares his journey of building companies with purpose, leading through innovation, and why intentional living is at the core of both great leadership and long-term success. We also are going to discuss the future of AI in healthcare, building high-performing teams, and the habits that help leaders perform at their best. Dylan, welcome to Leadership Lounge.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you both. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Great. So you've built companies in education and healthcare. So what leadership principle has remained constant through every chapter of your journey?
People first. There are so many tips and tricks, learnings, failures we could talk about. Probably don't have time for one podcast to dive in. But if you are getting the right people on the bus, empowering them in the ways that actually matter, and doing the job as a leader to know when to flex up my involvement, my management, or say, I brought you here because you are excellent. You're probably better than me, than I am at a certain task. Go lead. I'm here to follow. I like to joke that I'm CEO, sure, but I'm also chief garbage officer, right? Depending on the day, depending on the task, I do the most important or the thing that helps the next person do the most important task. And that's what leadership means to me. Mm.
What made you want to start Different Health? Entrepreneurship is definitely a journey, a tough journey at times. What made you want to be an entrepreneur and why Different Health?
Entrepreneurship is daunting, but it is worth it, in my opinion. And I should start by acknowledging that entrepreneurship is something that I'm doing as a founder. Mm-hmm. But I see you as an entrepreneur working at UBS. I see Mitch, you as an entrepreneur working for UBS in this capacity. And you are entrepreneurs. You are innovating every day. And so when I say entrepreneurship is worth it, it's not just founding a company. I don't believe everybody needs to be a founder to realize what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. But my Different Health story really originates when I was maybe in high school playing sports. And then when I got to college and experiencing what it was like to have coaches and dietitians and nutritionists and personal trainers and people who were doctors and physical therapists helping me be my best, I was first awakened to the idea that health is my performance
catalyst. What was your sport?
I played basketball. Okay. That was my main sport. I played everything under the sun back in the day, but growing up in Westchester, as we were talking before, for me, how am I going to be my best self on the court if I don't get the good night's sleep?
Right.
If I don't put the right fuel in my body, if I didn't go to the weight room and do the things I need to prepare, right? That said, the same holds true for all of us when we think about our sport today as corporate athletes. Right? If we don't—
You stole my word.
I use it
all the time.
There you go.
I use corporate athlete all the time.
And that's what matters.
Yes.
When you think about how do we prepare to be our best selves, of course you have a big meeting, right? You're pitching the investor, getting a new client. You're gonna study up. You're going to learn about what the other side of the table is coming in from. But ultimately, when you need to prepare, you are going to then get the night's sleep, make sure you have the minute of silence before you step into that room. And those are the things that sadly we forget about. No one takes the time to teach you. No one takes the time to instill. And so what we saw the opportunity in bringing power of health to companies, it's really a performance equation, right? We want to pitch Different Health as a performance catalyst. Because I saw the power of myself. I saw my first startup, when we invested in health and we gave people the freedom and the independence to also do the same, it led to results. And whether you are a Fortune 1 company or a startup of three, if you are not doing that, you are going to, at some point, lose out. Right? It might not be today, might not be this week or even this month, but if you think about the long journey of building companies, if you're not putting health at the table, good luck.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned that. Jay Wright sat in that chair not that long ago from Villanova, before the Knicks won. Go Knicks, Knicks in five.
Go Knicks.
You know, that's exactly what he talked about when we were talking about Brunson and you know, these great players. And health was a big, big part of what he talked to the players about throughout, you know, his career.
And I think about entrepreneurs especially, how many of us work so hard? And I experience this. I'm not perfect by any means. right? I'm running a healthcare company, and yet I skip workouts. Mm-hmm. I reach for the easy, you know, highly processed bar, food, snack, whatever it is, when I'm on the go between seven meetings, I sacrifice sleep. Mm-hmm. But if we're doing that once or twice, that's okay. If we're doing that every night for a week, okay, maybe for the biggest week of the year, that's okay. But if you realize through trends over time that these are the patterns, good luck, right? I am not going to be my best self on any meeting, on any team event, on any client pitch, if I'm not getting, at the very least, my sleep two nights out of three, right? And that's where we end up building this.
What would you say to someone, just in general, the three biggest mistakes people make with And maybe it's different in every age. I mean, obviously, I look at the world differently at 65 than I did at 35.
Sure.
Yeah.
Context matters. So I think the answer, sadly, is a boring one of telling about yourself, right?
Right.
What does your blood work look like, your family history, your day-to-day?
Right.
That said, generalizing, I think I said sleep. Let's start there. Sleep is the most important lever for almost everybody. No matter who you are, you're probably not getting enough sleep, right? If we're talking to, you know, the audience for a second, 10 out of 10 people are not getting enough sleep. If you want to challenge and say you're the one, okay, that's beautiful. Congratulations. For me personally, I'll make it a bit, you know, anecdotal, shall we say, that I have one of the APOE4 alleles. And back to your question, Sammy, that was part of my founding story with health. APOE4, very simple answer here, explanation. Mm-hmm. It means I have a higher percentage likelihood of late onset dementia. So things like Alzheimer's, a lot of cognitive diseases, dementia that we don't want.
Right.
But what is one of the best ways to make sure that I'm stacking the deck in my favor to at the very least give myself the
most
best chance?
Question you could ask right
sleep.
There.
And that's it, right? And if we focus on sleep, I'll say two quick other ones. We're probably not moving as much as we can. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean we have to become power lifters and, you know, compete for Mr. Olympia. Steps, walk, something for our New York City residents, anybody listening in a major city. Can you skip one subway stop and just walk a little bit extra, just walk to the next stop?
These are great tips.
Yeah.
That's something so easy, right?
I'm born and raised in Sweden, and you know, taking the train, taking the trolley, walking, driving less is just way of life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I think about when I go visit, you know, in Amsterdam or another European city, everyone's on a bike.
Yeah.
Right? And it's just the way of life.
Yeah. But you know, New York is special. I mean, people do live like that here.
Yeah.
Well, where I live in Dallas, it's a bigger problem because the infrastructure is not there. But there are ways to improve your health. So these are good tips.
Totally. That's what we want to do. Make it micro. Make it easy.
Right.
If I told you, hey, Sammy, I'm going to change your life, but I need 2 hours a day, 7 days a week. You're in the gym. You're going to be like, Dylan, I love it. I'm here for that. But I can't possibly. I'm traveling. I have, you know, family obligations, personal obligations. There's no way you can go 7 days a week, 2 hours a day. But if I said, can you give me 3 hours a week over three windows or over 10 windows? Now it's adjustable. And then maybe a year from now, you got the fourth hour and then the fifth hour. And that compounds. And that's the beauty of health.
It is.
It's very apparent in Dylan that he's profoundly passionate.
Well, clearly, he talks a lot about intentional living. And you know, how do you make sure, though, you're building a business that serves your life instead of a life that serves your business?
That's tough. And again, back to the entrepreneurs being the business, I think that oftentimes can be to the detriment of a lot of founders who become so absorbed in what they're building that, you know, Dylan is different health versus different health is something Dylan is doing and passionate about, but there's more to him, right? Family, friends, passion, whatever areas.
Right.
That said, for me personally, I want to make sure that I'm setting the example for my team. And that means if I am skipping, you know, a few hours of sleep one night, I nip it in the bud, right? I don't do that again the next day, because how could I possibly get on the phone and tell a client, I know that work dinner is really important to you. Can you call it at 2 hours instead of 4 hours? Can you have one drink instead of four if I'm not living it myself, right? What a hypocrite I would be. So I am almost like a walking billboard for different health. And I know that these things are serving me in the long run. I still have fun. I'm going to enjoy a drink, stay out late, right? Skip my bedtime for sure. These things happen. I'm a human being.
Especially in New York City.
New York City, right? We talked before this interview, how many things are going on this weekend alone, right? We've got seven plans and they're all wonderful.
Yeah.
But if I said, again, you have to live like a robot, I'm not going to speak to anybody, right? Anyone out there who maybe knows the name Brian Johnson, right? He's one of these archetypes, a biohacker. He's done a lot to move longevity forward. But I don't think that's who we want to emulate. We don't want to be the person who, you know, stays inside because we don't want to see sunlight. I love the beach.
Right.
I'm going to be there hopefully this weekend with my family.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's just part of life. Can we do that in a healthy, long-term, sustainable way? That's what we're here for.
Absolutely.
Dylan, healthcare is one of the hardest industries to disrupt. So I want to unpack that a little bit. And as a leader, when do you know when to be patient with your team and when to really push.
Mm. I'll speak to the healthcare portion first, Sammy. Now, I should qualify this. I am not a doctor. Mm-hmm. I do not have a healthcare background. I am the patient. I'm the client, if you will, of both public and private healthcare. Right? Over my 30 years on this planet, I've seen hundreds of doctors, probably more than any of us can actually qualify or count going back. That said, I think we can all agree that there's something missing in the system, right? And so what I bring is the innovator's mindset. That said, when we started Different Health, the very first thing I did, well before we actually started the business, was find the right talent who is within healthcare, the doctors, the nurse practitioners, the PTs, the PhDs in science, right? Bringing the right personnel, because I think the best innovation happens as a combination of from within as well as external. And that's the marriage that I try to embody. And to your point around pushing and knowing when to prod with the team, when it comes to patient care, I do not step on medical, clinical, anything like that. I brought in the best medical directors, the best MDs for a reason. Let them be great, right?
Yeah.
For me, what I can take ownership of and really push on is the patient experience, meaning when they arrive at our facility, how do we greet them? What's the portal look like online? What is the digital experience? How do we follow up with them? How do we make sure they feel top of mind, getting the care they want, but the actual care itself, hands off, that's not my swim lane, right? And that's my style of leadership. I don't think it's Dylan's job as a non-medical CEO to make the clinical decision around, should we test APOB? Is this marker in range, right? How do we follow? That's not my role. Yeah. My role is to think about the machine and how it meets the person where they are.
So your tip to other entrepreneurs, if I'm hearing correctly, is just know what you're good at and let your team kind of run. It's nothing different than what we're doing here.
100%.
We have the best of the best analysts, investors, all kinds of stuff. And I'm focused on the experience for my clients. So.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So clearly your success came pretty early, you know?
Yeah.
So
small amounts.
How's your definition of ambition, though, changed over the years?
I'm blessed to work on companies and problems that cannot be, let's say, financially or economically successful without helping people. And that is, I'd say, almost like an accident, a byproduct of me following areas that are of interest and passion. So my first company, we did a lot of work in education, a bit around career and recruiting. And I was raised by two parents who are educators. My dad was a high school principal. My mom, a psychologist, did a lot of her work in the New York City Board of Education.
Oh.
And then they ultimately led a nonprofit in the academic space. And so that was the conversation around dinner table, right? We'd come home and talk about that student who maybe my parents were struggling to reach or who had so much potential but wasn't realizing it. How could we work with them? And so it was natural that I started an education company, right? And my sister ended up joining us. She's now the CEO of that company, NextGen HQ. It's so special to get to work with her and
that's great.
Family business elements.
Yeah.
But that ultimately, from a success perspective, right, if you objectively look, we've now worked with over 100,000 young people across the country, around the world. And yes, the company is still in business and continuing to grow. But those are not separate, right? We cannot be around if we're not helping people. Different Health will not succeed. If we're running this podcast back 1 year or 10 years from now, we're not going to be thriving if we're not helping people achieve health outcomes. And I'm grateful that my financial success is tied to making the world a little bit of a better place, right? At the hip. And again, there's nothing wrong with, if you work on something that is completely unrelated to the well-being, but then I challenge you, what are you doing with the wealth you're creating? What impact are you making? And so for me, I'm blessed that I just wake up in the morning when I go to work, I'm hopefully furthering the impact I want to see. Healthier, more energetic lives and families and leaders. That's what we're here for.
What do you do to motivate the employee? Mm. So, I know for years for companies I've worked for, especially this one, I do see little programs here and there. And, and I'm wondering, what is it? Is it a health scare that motivates people? Is it someone losing someone their age what motivates people to take that next step? And what do you do as a leader with your company to push that forward?
Yeah, there are two, just generally simplifying it here, two types of motivation. There is positive motivation and negative motivation. Negative motivation, the latter, is what you were just talking about, in that a family member has a health scare.
Right.
Your friend that you grew up with, who's your age, had a heart attack.
Right.
Thank goodness they're alive, but
right.
Now life has changed.
Right.
Those are, oh my goodness, wake up, aha moments. I need to invest in my health.
Yeah.
And we want to make sure that the employee has the awareness of Different Health and the right resources, whether it's us or something else, when those moments happen. Because frankly, they will continue to happen, right? There's also positive motivation, which is, you know what? I think I could feel better. And that can happen in so many different ways. The person who wakes up a little bit tired is finally told or shown that this is not the norm. The person who put on a few pounds, maybe after a decade or two crushing in the business world, and is a bit slower and their back hurts, and you know, they then say, you know what, I can do something about this. They don't wait until the back surgery. They don't wait until the weight loss is impossible or much harder because it has just accumulated. And that person is who we want to reach earlier, the better. That's preventative healthcare, right? Finding people before the problem reaches an acute condition that you now need to seek treatment for, or you need to go to a hospital, or goodness forbid, something, a catastrophic event happens, and it's education, right? It also happens, we see it all the time, the best way that we grow is when we come to a company. We get to work with a few early adopters who are really the biohackers, the people into their health. We all know a friend or you know, that weirdo, so to speak, is always talking about, you know, my marker, and they got an Oura Ring on or something of the sort. If they tell a friend, and they bring us to the next person, that's the best way to grow. Right now we have the trust from someone you know, and we can grow within circles, within teams, all the time. We say, oh yeah, my boss told me about this, so I signed up. Not really sure why or what, but I know there's something. There's something I can get better at. And so I'd say anybody, right, who's feeling like low energy, you just know internally, intrinsically, that there's a little bit more that you can be doing or a better version of you, that's the time to seek the help. Not after the problem, but before. And we want to be there. We want to be ready for you when and if it's not different health, I hope you find whoever the right care is. But that's what success looks like.
I have to ask you something to unpack. You are an entrepreneur that's growing a health business. This term work-life balance comes out all the time. This generation loves that term. The baby boomers didn't have work-life balance. They're just grinding it out all the time.
Yeah.
How do you have work-life balance? To me personally, it's all one life.
Yeah.
So you strike me as someone very passionate. How do you keep yourself in check?
I'll throw out a term that I think you'll like, Sammy. Work-life harmony. So instead of balance, it's harmony. I do not break my time up 50-50. It's just the truth, right? And this is not disrespectful to, not meant to be disrespectful to anybody who does think 50-50 from an hour split. But I work on average, I don't know, 12 to 15 hours a day. But I love it and I appreciate
it. Right.
That said, when the family moments are there, right? When my girlfriend and I are going to Italy for a wedding, I want to make sure I'm present for her. I want to make sure that I'm investing in the people that I care about. My parents, God bless them, huge inspiration for different health. They are in the later portion of their lives, right? And they've got 30, 40 years left, don't get me wrong. But they're both retired now, and I want to make sure I am there for them. And so when I go home for a weekend, I'm going to really try and make an effort to not use that time checking emails or maybe put my phone away. And I know when to do that, when it's safer or more dangerous. I'm not doing that on Monday at 9 a.m., right? I'm not leaving my phone saying, okay, see you later, team.
Yeah, right.
But I have great people, right? We build teams for a reason. And I heard this analogy early in my career. If you are core to the business day to day, you don't have a company. You have a job.
Mm-hmm.
If you can step away and the business, maybe it doesn't 10X, but it continues to operate, you have a company, right?
So entrepreneurs learn from each other, though. How did you learn at 30 years of age to be this effective?
I am so blessed that my first company, NextGen HQ, when I was 18, we hosted our first, we called it NextGen Summit. The whole goal was to bring together young entrepreneurs, and we just built a community. And these entrepreneurs were a little bit further than me in my career, right? They were one stage ahead, two stages ahead. They were some of the mutual friends that we share, we talked about, and I just picked up nuggets. And so my job in that case was to serve other entrepreneurs. And in the process, I get to meet them, learn from them. We wrote a book called Now That's Momentum. And the whole goal of this book was to distill from 50 different entrepreneurial leaders across tech, education, you name it, the industry. And we just took their nuggets of wisdom and put it out there in a way that's accessible. And I like to think about the hand in the sand analogy. So if you can envision advice being like the sand that you reach down, you grab some sand from the beach, and when you raise it, most of the sand falls through your fingers. But the few nuggets that maintain those grains of sand, those are the pieces that stay with you. And that's how I live my career.
I got to share with the audience, we had a small world moment in the Hamptons a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Where we were both at this event, Uncharted. Talk about the importance of networking, because I believe in connections.
Totally.
You obviously have had great success networking and getting investors early on, or those types of big influential folks that's going to help different health. Talk about the power of networking.
It is everything. Networking, while some folks can view it as a job to be done, I think that might be a transactional look. And look, don't get me wrong, there are times when you need to go to that meeting, you need to show up and shake a hand and, you know, show face at an event. I get it. But if you view networking as relationship building, whether it's for today or for 10 years from now, because I know that Sammy's a great guy and I enjoy learning from him. He's made some great intros. I've met some wonderful people. I've learned from him. We might not be able to do work together today. Mm-hmm. And comes around. Mm-hmm. And so the Uncharted event is a great example. I met Michael Loeb, the host of that event, when he was a speaker at our conference in maybe 2015. Fast forward years, he then is one of my first investors.
Amazing.
In Action HQ.
Mm-hmm. That's not a small investor to have. Either.
No, he's wonderful, yeah, right? And that's powerful.
That's a return on relationship.
Yeah,
this is something I preach all the time.
That is his
return on relationship.
Yeah.
This is what matters. And I mean, that is just such a pure example of ROR working. I mean, it really is. Before I get to our signature question, got to bring up AI, of course. Mm. So it's obviously transforming healthcare like everything else. So where do you think great leadership will matter even more as this technology continues to evolve?
I'll go back to the people to start.
Yeah.
And I'll say that you need to have people who are forward-looking. Mm-hmm. The best doctors in the world who are not willing to work with AI are going to fall behind. It's just the truth. It's hard to hear. And I am very clear about this. I do not believe that AI is going to replace doctors, at the very least anytime soon.
Hope not.
I hope not, right? And for all of us,
I was glad that there's a real surgeon in there working on me. I'll tell you.
There you go, for sure. And listen, fast forward 5 or 10 years, if the surgeon is conducting a robotic instrument to run that surgery,
yeah,
I think you'd probably feel safe. That said, there is this human nature element that we will trust natively, just as we wake up subconsciously, a human element in addition to technology. And so my role from a leader perspective is to use the tools myself. I am living and breathing cutting edge AI. So I'm spending most of my time working with foundational models, meeting leaders who are pushing AI forward, and then finding the nuggets to sync with my team, to bring back to different health and to build systems that are human plus tech. Right? We as a company, we want to automate any of the operations that are not, let's say, the ones that move the needle. So if it's, you know, scheduling or booking, and sure, we could have a human being sending emails, or we could build a system that's AI powered to do that, and our client doesn't notice the difference, and maybe they actually get served better, they get their appointment faster. That's mm-hmm. a great use case of AI, right? There's this analogy of services business
right.
using AI in the back end mm-hmm. so that the client feels the power of the service, human plus tech, but on the back end, we can automate as much as possible to use our dollars, our resources, our time for the client on the front end. That's my viewpoint.
I think anyone listening or watching is probably, you know, wondering, okay, well, I use ChatGPT a lot. You know, I'm not feeling great and putting my symptoms in, or I just had some blood tests. You know, what do you think I should do? What's your take there?
These models are so good. I use them personally.
Yeah.
Right? If I get blood work mm-hmm. and I get it a little more frequently than most everybody, we tend to have access to that. One of the first things I'm going to do is upload my data to, I have a project on ChatGPT, Claude, whatever the model is, and I'll get feedback. But ultimately, that project may not have the context and the full awareness of all of my symptoms, my predisposition, what I'm doing in life, even my calendar, mm-hmm. right? But from a data aggregation perspective, AI is so powerful. Then I take those findings, those notes, I educate myself, and I'll go have a conversation with one of our MDs and say, hey, I was doing some research, and you know, based on this, I thought maybe I'd be a fit for ABC. What do you think about that?
What do the MDs think when people come in and say, you know, I was, you know, used to be I was Googling, now I was Clauding or ChatGPTing or whatever, co-piloting.
Yeah.
What do the MDs you work with think about that?
I'll tell you a story, Mitch. Yeah. Going back to probably 2022, mm-hmm. there's this marker called ApoB. Not so important that we all know what it is. It's an advanced cardiovascular risk
right.
metric. And ultimately, I'd read about it. Mm-hmm. I'd listened and learned, and there was no panel available through my primary care physician to order an ApoB marker blood test. I asked my doctor, I said, doc, I've done all this research. I had papers. I came in mm-hmm. well-educated around why I wanted my ApoB measured. I have a family history on my dad's side of right. cardiovascular incidents. And I asked, can we run this test as part of my annual physical? He said no. And he was actually disengaging. He was not willing to have a conversation about that.
Hmm.
And that was a moment for me. I ended up firing my PCP. I didn't go back to him.
Clearly.
And that led to this idea that, why do I need someone who's not willing to play with the times, right? To catch up and be with me, be a partner in my journey. I don't. I need a doctor who is willing to take what might have previously been seen as a, you know, over-anxious patient. And I have my versions of that. Don't get me wrong. I'm not perfect either. But a doctor who says, I like that my patient's coming in educated. I appreciate they're spending the time. It's going to be the best patient, goodness forbid, if we need to do something. Because Dylan will follow, he'll adhere, and view this relationship as a two-way street versus, I'm the doctor, I tell you what to do, you don't get to ask questions. And I think those are the best doctors. They will be the ones who continue to thrive. They'll be the ones leading healthcare companies in the future when they can embrace that AI is going to replace some elements of what I do as a doc, but it's not going to replace me. And that's the dichotomy that we're trying to walk the line.
Yeah, and I think that's it's actually interesting, Sam, because I think that's exactly the same thing in financial service.
Sure.
It's never going to replace a human being.
No, it's not.
But it might yeah. interact.
It's gonna, financial services, legal, we can name so many industries that I think we can all agree, do we need a human being to do copious amounts of research versus Claude or probably not.
Right.
But when it comes to distilling that down and having a conversation with the client and saying, you know, of the 10 problems you have, this is the one to work on and here's why. That's where the human and the relational elements, and who knows, maybe one day, 10 years from now, AI can do all these things and you know it's wonderful and we can all go work on our health, work on our relationships and sit on the beach. Lovely. But we're not there yet, right? And that's the truth.
I got to shift real quick. Yeah. One thing, as I'm listening to you, what founder does not want their employees or their people to be healthy? And in return, if you have healthy people, you create more enterprise value because they're going to be more productive. How can other entrepreneurs or executives or anyone listening to this learn more about how to partner with you? And what do you think the greatest impact will be 10 years from now? Maybe? Like if you really get in here and like disrupt.
Yeah.
That's a really deep question, but as I'm listening to him, there's some enterprise value that can be created through health.
Mm-hmm. You get it because you live it, right?
Yes.
And so what I would say to any founder, any executive out there, get in the game yourself, call us up, or reach out. We want to work with you, but partner with the individual first. We will show you the value. And when you wake up and you make a better trade that day, you make a better decision, you feel your cognitive abilities returning to that level when you were 21, then you will say, how could I not want this for my people? And you're so right. The ROI, yes, it's ROR too, because your people, they will thank you. They'll stay longer, retention. You'll attract better talent because the team will feel invested in, but also, healthcare costs are so expensive and they're rising. If we can invest a little bit upfront to save the downstream cost, I mean, if you look at even cancer as an example, late stage cancer and the treatment plan can oftentimes be high six digits, low seven digits per person. If you can intervene and catch that a little bit earlier, not only will you save that person's life, which is priceless, that will also be directly reflected in your bottom line. Right, for these large employers that are self-insured, there's a dollar return too. So, and that goes beyond the talent, beyond the return on relationships. Yeah, no. These are the things that we think about. And 10 years from now, I'd like to think that what Different Health does, we're not a preventative healthcare company. We are a healthcare company. Mm-hmm. And that everybody, my dream, and I joke with the team all the time, if the reason we fail as a business is because our services are simply the norm when you go to get your primary care physical, I can sleep well at night, right? I'm sorry, we tried, but everything we pioneered is now just part of healthcare, general, right? There's no preventative healthcare. It's just healthcare.
When I first met you, I shared a story in a very big group that I'm part of, CEO Coaching International. He looked as healthy as he can be.
Yeah.
He was super organized with everything in life, but he wasn't organized taking care of his health. I guess he didn't go to the doctor and just suddenly had a heart attack. Mm. Boarding a plane to a conference that we were all going to. It was just an eye-opening moment for me.
Yeah,
You've got it. Which affected the CEO immensely.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Like he was distraught he's probably still hurting from it. So, and there's great importance of what we're talking about today.
You got to get there before. That is the key. So, always ask this. With crediting to Tim Ferriss, but I love this question so much. So we like to wrap up the show with this. You're granted a giant billboard for the entire world to see. Your message, okay, everybody's going to see it. They're going to drive by on their way out to the Hamptons, on the Turnpike, you know, on Route 66, wherever they are in America. What is that message and why?
Mm. Okay, I've got a cheeky answer, and I've got the official.
That's okay.
The cheeky answer is sleep more. Sleep more on the billboard, right? Everyone, just sleep more. The Different Health answer would be along the line, Sammy, of what you just alluded to. You have someone managing your money. You have someone managing your business, or you are doing those. Who's managing your health? And leave it there. If you have an answer for me, great job, fist bump, right? High five, I'm proud of you. Thank you, you're doing your work. That said, most people don't have a quarterback for their health. And that's when you call us, right? Not again, when you have the heart attack, when goodness forbid the friend that you love and you've been brothers their whole life, they you know, pass on too early. Do it now when things are good. The best time to fix your health is before there's a problem. And that's the billboard.
What's the best way for people to reach you, Dylan?
I would love to connect with anybody. Feel free to reach out on LinkedIn. I'm Dylan Gambardella. Reach us on differenthealth.com. We look forward to learning more and supporting you on your journey.
Great. And we will link in the comments and in the show notes to everything. So Dylan, on behalf of Sammy, thank you so much for joining us here in our beautiful studio. And this has been a really, really great conversation on leadership, innovation, intentional living, the future of healthcare. You know, there's a lot here, folks. We really appreciate you sharing your journey and the lessons that you have learned along the way. I think, Sammy, we could all learn from this one.
Absolutely. This is a very enlightening one. Thank you very much.
Thank you both.
Appreciate it.
I appreciate you.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review Client Relationship Summary, provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.